Is this thing on?
All right, let's get this show on the road. Okay.
Hey, accents are back.
Yes, they are.
That's it. People have spoken.
Episode 37, Coffee and Carving Show, folks. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Episode 37 is right. They're adding up, aren't they?
They're getting up there for sure.
Let me find my glasses here so I can read to you. But oh, why should you wear glasses to math class?
Why?
Because it helps with division.
Ah, that's a good one. That's a good one. I like that one. It doesn't provoke laughter, but it's a good one.
Maybe let me give you.
And the accents are back; they really are. The vision.
The vision. Okay, if you don't like that, then a golf club.
Uh-huh.
A golf club walks into a bar and orders a drink. Uh-huh. Bartender refuses to serve him.
Uh-huh.
Why? Says the golf club. My money's as good as anyone else's here. Mm. Bartender replies, "Because I know you're going to be driving later."
Maybe that isn't so bad. I think that one's actually pretty decent. I like that one. I think I like that one even better. What do you guys think? Let's hear it.
Cuter. It's cuter.
Yeah, it is cuter. Absolutely.
Have you seen a golf driver going to a bar before?
Never once.
Me neither.
No.
Anyway. All right. Here we are, folks. We have a special guest coming on later, which we share our coffee together with, so we're going to save that for later on. And our guest this week is Brian Melton, but we'll save him after our check-in. But I want to make a point of saying thanks to our coffee heroes of the week. We've got Anonymous again and Roger and Lee. So thanks, guys, for the coffees this week. It's never expected, but always appreciated.
That's right. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. So on that note, what have you been up to this week?
This week has been, well, today I got back from getting fitted for a wedding. I've been carving a lot. I've been filming for the school, getting ready for a workshop, and, you know, just kind of the usual stuff, but in different proportions, a little bit more of the wedding stuff, a little bit more of the carving stuff, getting ready for a slew of wood carving workshops. So it's been a good time, and all of that with kind of buttoning up house projects, kind of getting some new ideas for the house with Annalise about to coming in soon. And so yeah, it's been good. How about you?
Well, I'm curious. Am I going to be seeing a powder blue tuxedo in your future?
No powder blue. I mean, maybe I'll wear one at some point, but not at my wedding.
No,
it's gonna be bright pink. Apparently, my suit, everything. So,
I don't believe you, but
you'll see. Completely pink, everything.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it fits, doesn't it? I wore a pink hoodie today to work. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
Carving wise, you can't get off that easy. What have you been carving? What have you been working on?
Oh, just a bunch of things. Some of it I'd rather not talk about because I'm going to give it away to particular somebody. And then,
I can't wait.
Oh, I know. It's
for me?
I don't think you'd want this one. They're just buttoning up some old things that have been sitting around the shop. It seems to be what I do right before an art show is I'll have like some pieces like sitting up on a shelf. And so I'm finishing some carvings. I put a bird into Wood Spirit's hair yesterday and just silly stuff like that. So,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, for me, I don't even know. I had a fail. I had a monumental fail for a YouTube video. I tried to, I have it in my head and I'm still going to do it. So you can hold me to it. I want to carve a good Ron Swanson in bark. I've tried it before, wasn't overly happy with it. So this time, full of confidence, I attacked it, and then I lost my way while filming. And I got done, and I said, this looks awful. And I said, maybe I'll call it Ron's brother, Bob. And then I screwed up the eyes, and now I just said, I just scrapped the whole thing. I deleted the whole camera card. People always ask, do you ever give up on anything? And I say, yes, I do. But I'll show you. His face got away from me. He got skinny, and he does not look like Ron Swanson. He looks like his cowboy brother, Bill, or something, right?
Yeah, it looks cool, but though.
It's too skinny. He's too skinny. He needs a fatter face, and I took away too much meat, so you can't add it back on.
Dude,
so,
I make the opposite mistake. I always make things too fat, like too wide, and then I have to narrow them down.
I wish I had done that. What happened was it started with I started giving him a neck. And by giving him a neck, he doesn't really have a neck, hardly. His neck is almost as thick as his head. And so I made the neck narrow, and that just immediately thinned up everything.
Right.
And I lost him. But regardless, it was good practice.
Yeah.
But I wish I wasn't filming, because you waste so much time filming.
Yeah.
And then just to delete the whole thing. But regardless, I did put out a YouTube video this week, real quirky, fun little video on the, I call it the chip clip.
Oh, nice.
I had... It's just silly. You have to watch it on YouTube. It's like 2 minutes of me acting like a moron, like I used to all the time. And it's fun. It was fun to do.
I like that video. I enjoyed that one.
It seems to be keeping everyone's attention for at least 70% of a 2 minute video. So that's a lot better than I can say in the past.
Yeah.
But what else? Saturday. Well, here's a story. Saturday, I got up and wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I decided, late Friday night, that I was going to go to my carving store. Number 11s, I think I have a 2 millimeter and a 6 millimeter, and then the bigger ones after that. But I wanted to get like a, what did I say, 2 and 6? I need like a 4. I have a 4 and a small tool, but not as a full size. And I will. Anyway, I'd like just to go there and hang out and talk. But I drove. It's an hour and a half drive one way. And I drove all the way there. And I got there chipping away. I turned the last corner. I only had like half a kilometer to go, 500 meters. And all of a sudden, I drove right into a roadblock, police barricade, yellow tape, police cars all over, police, those big... whatever they call, like the big trucks and everything. This is my cop stopped me on the road, and he said, can I help you? Where are you going? I said, I'm going to Chipping Way right there. I can see it. He goes, no, you're not going there today, sir. I said, are you kidding me? He goes, nope, this is a crime scene, and all the businesses are closed. I said, are you kidding? I drove an hour and a half. He said, sorry, man. And so turned around, had to drive an hour and a half home. 3 hours, $2 a liter gas, 3 hour drive for absolutely nothing. But I did see after that, I pulled into a parking lot beside and just to stretch, because I was all excited to get out of my truck and stretch. And I stopped and I looked and I saw bloody clothes on the road. So I started talking to another cop, and he told me that it was a underground nightclub. And there was a stabbing or something that night. So I guess they just take over an industrial building for a night. Huh. Have you heard of these things? Me neither. But that was interesting. So then I'm driving home, and I'm just about home, about a half hour out from home. And my wife calls me like with panic in her voice. I'm like, what's wrong? Because she's not one to get worked up about much. And she's like, are you driving? I was like, yeah, I'm driving. She goes, go pull over. Find something to do. Just get off the highway. I'm like, why? She goes, it's an incredible storm at home. Incredible storm. And she was sending me pictures of like bigger than marble-sized hail, handfuls of hail. And the trees were getting blown down and the wind was crazy. I'm like, all right, I got nothing here. And I turned the corner off the 401. And I turned right into it. I looked, it's just black. So I did get off, and I went and sat in a Tim Hortons parking lot, and watched the storm come in. And I was sitting there in my little Jeep, just rocking like this in the parking lot, just blowing, and leaves and sticks are flying by. And it was incredible, incredible storm. And didn't last long at all. And I drove home, but the damage was incredible. Like, people still today don't have hydro. There was so many trees were knocked down, and I don't think I ever heard of a tornado or not, but it was a wicked, wicked windstorm and lots of damage. And even on the church's property, I've been cleaning up trees that had broken and fallen over. So,
oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, aye, aye, aye. Well, glad that's over with.
What I've been up to, but the storm and the follow up cleanup, and yeah, that's about it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, let's get into our interview, eh?
Yeah. Here's Brian.
This time around, we have a great friend, somebody who I've looked up to in the last few months, seeing his incredible, the volume of work. His production has been just incredible to see, his growth in the last couple of years. I greatly admire this dude, and we've talked over FaceTime a few times in the last couple months as well, just chatting about ideas and carvings, and both being interested in this larger scale at the same time, this life size and sub life sized scale. And we're just glad to have Brian Melton on episode 37.
Welcome, Brian.
I appreciate that. How are you all doing?
Good.
Good.
Well, what are y'all having to drink? Oh, go ahead.
Oh.
Just some regular coffee and my classic Keeping It Smoky Mountain Real here with my ale wine cup, some 1850 blend dark roast that came out of here. So just some K-Cup.
What's wrong with that?
Canada Dry.
I'm representing.
Are you in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Maybe that's why you can't find pecan sandy cookies.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got coffee, your run-of-the-mill decaf, the same stuff I've been drinking the last few weeks. It's tolerable. It's all right. It kind of makes me sad, but it'll do.
Well,
it's better than no coffee.
Our special guest here, I want to ask him right off the bat, how did you get started? Because you came in running. I'd love to hear your intro to wood carving story, because you just came in like a flurry, and I also want to know how much time you carve a day plus working, because you're a maniac.
Well, I'll get to all those. I guess I'll take them one at a time. So
yeah, for sure.
My wood carving story is a little bit weird and a little bit short, being honest with you. So I've always liked to create things. I'm truly a compulsive artist, and there's just always been a need to create things. In a book that I read one time, The Spiritual World of Tolkien, it was actually talking about people wanting to imitate the Father, and being sub-creators is what it referred to it as. And I think there is a element of each individual that just has a need to create, a need to make something beautiful, a need to do something beautiful. I heard another person say, you know, there's a need to conquer giants. And also, I was a really ADHD kid, probably am as an adult too, and everybody's just kind to me and they don't say a whole lot about it. But there's some things that I'm really great at and some things that I'm pretty terrible at. So as a kid, it was very hard for me to sit in classes and pay attention. So I would doodle and draw, and I would watch little drawing shows like Pappy Drew It and Mark Kistler. And I grew up loving to draw. And I would draw like basketball players. Like, I can't tell you how many times I drew like the Bulls symbol or Michael Jordan. And I'm aging myself right there. Michael Jordan was in his prime whenever I was a kid. So he was a common one to draw. For some reason, I've always been drawn to figurative. When I turned around 22-ish, I decided to learn to draw portraits in pen and ink. And I don't know why I picked pen and ink. I just kind of like, I don't know why, but something permanent like that, like a pencil is a lot easier to draw with in some respects, but at the same time, I don't like it. as good as well. So I learned to draw realistic portraits, and I never really had any art school. I had a art class my freshman year of high school, and then I had an art appreciation class that I slept through in college. It was an 8 a.m. class. But other than that, I didn't really have anything. So whenever I learned to draw portraits, I used the pencil, and I would mark little spots on the pencil as a measuring stick, and I would start by drawing the eye. Most people might – I've done a lot more studying since, and a lot of people use like a Riley method or a Loomis method. But I would use the pencil as a measuring tool, and then I would use that to gauge where everything else on the face needed to be. So like it would be two lengths of this point of the eraser to the end of the eraser from the eye, between the eye, and then – you know what I mean? Something like that is the way that I kind of figured that out. And I kind of had a goal of like drawing, taking people's old family photos and recreating those and turning those into a piece of art. And then for a while, then I kind of stopped doing things, remodeled some houses, worked a lot. I'm a public school teacher in my day job, and I really took that seriously. I wanted to be a great teacher. So, a lot of grading, a lot of planning, and then one day somebody said, hey, you need to start posting your stuff on, I don't know, they said, I don't know if TikTok was even a thing 3 years ago. It might have been, and I was just completely ignorant of it. I still don't have TikTok. You need to post it on Pinterest or Instagram. One of my wife's friends told me that. So I was always doing something around the house. I hadn't done art in a long time. So I just started, well, I say that. But I was like building things, and I was painting murals and things in the house. And then I started posting some things, and my original Instagram name was Master of None, which is kind of random, but that whole Jack of all trades, but Master of None thing. Yeah, like I always felt like I was never like super great at one thing. But usually I could get pretty decent at a lot of things that I set my head to. And then after a while, my brother posted a picture of a spoon that he had carved. And I was like, hey, that's cool. I want to carve a spoon. So this has been about a little less than 3 years ago now. I carved a spoon, and a spoon turned into another spoon or two. And then that turned into me getting a Dremel set from my grandmother that was my papa's. And I carved her a hummingbird and trumpet flowers using a Lancelot that I had used a few years before with like some just really rough bowls that I decided, hey, I want to carve a bowl. So I went and got a Lancelot. And I was literally doing some really, really stupid things with the chainsaw blade on an angle grinder. And then I needed a mask for a Wesley House Foundation ball, so I decided I'll carve a mask. And then it was like, well, I think I can carve a bust. And I carved a bust that was pretty terrible. And from there, I don't know, maybe it was a challenge of it, something like that. I just really enjoyed it, and I've kept pursuing it ever since. I got a secondhand set of tools at a Smoky Mountain Woodcarvers Festival or competition, and actually used those tools to carve a competition a couple years ago. FlexCut offered $500 to whoever would win the competition, and I thought, well, $500 worth of tools is a lot. I've always been pretty frugal about spending like money that could be bill money on myself or on things like that. I always tried to make do with what I had. So I carved that competition. I ended up starting that competition 2 weeks late because I torn that knuckle up with that Lancelot.
With that Lancelot. That's the most dangerous carving tool there is, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. It got me pretty good. I bounced it off my knuckle. And so I ended up starting that competition 2 weeks late and with a splint and stitches, and ended up carving the competition by hand with a FlexCut Deluxe starter set. And it was actually a portrait of my wife that I ended up carving. And they said, we don't want you to win the competition, but what we want you to do is we want you to just partner with us, and we'll supply your tools. So pretty much all the tools you see behind me, except for this set right here, is all things that people have since sponsored me with. Pretty much all of them back there. There's a few that I bought here and there, like yard sales and things, or one or two that a couple that I got from, few that I got from my wife for a birthday present. But most of the tools back here are ones that are have been graciously given to me. And then I tried to make good on that with them and wanted to make videos and how-to videos. And I don't know, somewhere along the way, I just got a bug. There was a gentleman by the name of Claire, who is just a brilliant fish and bird carver here in the Tennessee area, just down the road from me. And I was looking at the detail on his work, the way that those bird carvers are insane. Like every single feather, and then the way that they paint with the airbrushes, like there's no room in the bird carving world for upstarts, it seems like, because those people are insane. They do great work. But I was looking at the excellence that he had and the detail that he had, and I kind of started to aspire to that. And then I started watching and researching and looking up artists, and I found Fred Kojula, I'm not sure. But I started looking at his work and looking at how like meticulously developed it was, and the voice that he had, and the way that he takes a figure and makes it look very Norman Rockwell-esque and tells that same kind of regional story with it, with a little bit of humor, but then at the same time, an element of realism that hits somewhere at home. I really was inspired by Fred Kojula's work. And then, of course, I was researching and studying, and Bruno Walhoff, of course, came up, and I started looking at his just, like, impeccable realism. And I aspired to do something like that. I really wanted to do it, but I wanted to do it by hand. I see a lot of CNC machines and a lot of robotic computerized sculpture. And I kind of wanted to model myself after a John Henry and kind of beat the machine. My motivation has been something, I know it's been a little less than 3 years, but it's like it's started one way and morphed and changed and adapted and evolved as it's progressed. So I don't know exactly where it's going to go next as far as like where I'm at in my head with it. Just started a series called Compulsive Improvisations, which is I'm just letting it be that compulsion where it's like that need to create and embracing that. But then I'm doing improv work. So I'm basically sculpting from my head without a reference. And I might look at some photos here and there just to kind of get an idea of form, but largely it's just me sculpting from my head and doing that. Norman Rockwell actually had a quote in a book that I study a lot. Norman Rockwell had a quote in a book that said, his idea was that you needed to learn to sculpt from your head first, or draw from your head first, and before you started relying on photographs. I can't remember the exact reason that he gave for that, but that always stuck with me. So I try to have the knowledge here and study enough to where I can understand it and know how the flow is, basically what should be where. And then I do still draw quite a bit, and I draw from my head. I'm working on a piece right now and it's just ladies' faces, and I'm drawing little bitty faces of ladies on this huge piece of watercolor board. And I think so far I've got I think I've got around 100, and I think it'll be total that I can fit around 500 on that sheet. Wow. I don't know when that piece will ever be done. I think it's going to be a work in progress for a while, because if I draw 10 at a time, you know, even though they're small, just little sketches from my head, still 10 at a time is quite a bit. So it gives me an excuse to practice. You ask about when do I start? So we have a newborn in the house, and Gabriel, our son, is 5 months old right now. So my carving time has been cut back some, but I'm still working at it. It's not something that I want to give up, but at the same time, I want to be a good father. So it's navigating being a husband and a father and a family man, and then also my day job, and then still pursuing a passion that I truly believe is a gift and a talent. Even there's been a lot of hard work, but there's some God-given gifts there. I truly believe that. And I want to be a good steward of that. So a lot of times I wake up just kind of on my own around 4:30 a lot of mornings. And a lot of times I'll start carving by 5:15. I'll sit in bed beside my wife and I'll drink a cup of coffee. Usually go get the baby and bring her so that she can nurse. And then usually as he goes back to bed, then I'll go down to my studio, and I work at a magnet school. So it's, we start classes at 9:30. So I have to be there at 9:00. So if I start at 5:30 in the morning, I can easily carve till 8:30 in the morning. And I get about 3 hours in the morning while still kind of sleeping.
So yep.
That's when I kind of carve out my time. I guess that was a fun one. Yeah, but I wake up early in the morning, and then sometimes I'll come in, and if I get a notion that I can't get out of my head, like, I'll do a little bit in the evening, I'll do a little bit on weekends, but still spend time with the family. A lot of the evenings are reserved for them, for the most part.
I love that that you get up that early and pursue your carving. People always say, how do I get better at carving? You don't get better without practice, and the discipline to get up that early to carve every day, something that, I mean, Alec could learn from that too.
Truly though. No, absolutely.
No, that's amazing. I love that. Yep.
Yeah. That is awesome. Something that you mentioned too about the Lancelot. I just filmed an instructional video, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours ago, and I went off on some tangent in my outro about how that you should probably get rid of that tool if you have it. And the kid that I have filming for me, I was like, was that just a huge like 10-minute tangent instead of an outro? And he was like, yes, but you probably just leave it in because it's probably relevant. It might save someone's fingers, you know.
I mean, just saying, I walked into that urgent care place. I didn't go to the regular hospital. I just went down the road to the urgent care. And I kind of just know by now when I need stitches. You know, you can tell by the people, okay, this one needs stitches. And when your bones, when you're seeing your bone like that, you know that, okay, yeah, probably need some. But had an old doctor in there who had done ER in West Virginia in a coal mining town, and he was this hilarious dude. But I walked in there and he looked at me and said, this ain't going to hurt me a bit. And he gave me the best stitches I ever had in my life.
Oh.
He took what looked like hamburger and made it look like, I mean, I've got full mobility in that finger, which is, so he was able to clean it up without a ton of excess scar tissue. I was really thankful for that. But yeah, that Lancelot, it's some bad news. When it grabs you, it's going to grab you and it's going to hit hard.
Yeah.
Basically, what I use now, I use a Dremel very minimally. A lot of what I use is just gouges
and
then some files. I use the Dremel even just like extremely minimally, if at all. I just kind of like the regular tools, you know, the gouges.
Yep. Yeah, no, I appreciate that too, because I often think I could be so much faster with a power tool, and I'm like, but then I don't enjoy it as much. I like the old mallet and chisel and wailing on it.
Yeah, I agree.
Something that me and Alec have a back and forth with, but I'm curious too, is how did you always stay in the artist lane? without veering into the goofy or the characterism, or you've been really focused on the realism. Is that something you just naturally prefer?
Yes. I've tried caricatures. And honestly, my goals are to be in museums and fine art galleries. I mean, that's,
yeah.
I want to be one of the people who's integral in taking a form of art that is largely celebrated and well-recognized in places like Italy and Japan, and bring that to the U.S. The U.S. is a couple years behind on that. You look at the tradition of wood carving in Italy, for instance, and it's just insane. And for some reason, the U.S. still has this like barrier wall built between large. It seems like this, at least. It's like, for some reason, clay and stone and these other mediums that you might sculpt in is kind of in this category over here, but wood is still seen as being colloquial craft. Like, I don't necessarily go along with that. Wood is a difficult medium to work. It's, I don't see why something that you can get for free over here, something that's natural, organic, it's easily salvaged. I don't see why that separation has been there. So taking something like wood and working with it and trying to bring it to its maximum potential, has been something that I still strive for and work on. You know, any artist can look at their work and say, yeah, I've got some errors and some flaws there. I can look at every piece that I've done and I'm like, I would have done this differently. But at the same time, whenever somebody walks up to it and they're like, whoa, you mean this is wood? You know, it's a really cool feeling. I've always wanted to feel like I was amazing at something. And I don't know if I'll ever get to the point where I'm like, where that little bit of insecurity is completely gone. But it is one of the things that pushes me to want to do the very best I can. And for me, the epitome of that was figurative realism. And that's one reason why I pursued carving realistic human faces. It's like, that's the most challenging thing. And for some reason, I love that. Caricatures, as I'm trying to find still, I'm 3 years in and I don't have a bunch of theory and classes on that, you know? So I'm still trying to find where I'm at as an artist. I think I'm kind of getting to where I've got some notion of that. And just embracing the idea that I love it and it's truly a compulsion for me. But the caricatures I don't know. I've tried them, but it just doesn't. I don't like it. Like, yeah. I appreciate it. Like Alex Joyner from Joyner's Handcrafted in Alabama. Like, I look at his work and I'm like, dude, he is really cool and I love what he does. But I don't like it for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not good at it. It's something just like figurative realism. It's like something you got to practice. And I've not had a strong desire to do it.
No, fair enough. That's to each their own. And that's why I always ask, because Alec has a real penchant for the realism, and I'm just whatever. I have no idea what I am.
Kind of like birds. Like, my grandma asked me to do a bird, and I was like, Grandma, I'm not good at carving birds. And she said, oh, you can do it. And if Grandma asks for something, it gets done. So I did a bird, and I mean, it was fun, and it was fun to try, but it's not something that I think that I would spend days and hours and dedicate a ton of time to. You know, it's just kind of like you find something that you're a little bit passionate about, and that's what you roll with.
Now, one more for me before Alec just starts talking up a storm. How do you deal with your ADHD brain which, by the way, all three of us are in the same boat. Yeah. How can you have such a project take so many days and weeks? How, to me, when I start something, I can never put it down. I want something quick and I want to be done. I can't have this long-term project. It would drive me insane. Is it just something that you just set aside? This is the time I have and that's it? Or is it, we have a different brand of ADHD?
Well, it can, something like that can manifest in a lot of different ways. And we normally think of attention, hyperactivity deficit. I can't remember. It's changed a little bit the way that terminology works, but sometimes it can also be a hyper-focus, at the expense of everything else around you. So whenever I get started on something, it's like everything else goes to the wayside. I'd never know where I set my tools. They're here, there, and everywhere. In my mind, like that's one beautiful thing about it, because for a mind that does seem to be here and everywhere all the time, and it's truly exhausting, whenever you can really get in there and like hyper focus on this, okay, I've got this and I've got to get this right here, right? And then there are so many little obstacles to overcome within that, like, okay, good. This lip is set. This form is set. Look how this removal right here, just the undercut underneath that lip, just brought that. You know, like there's so much there that you can do with it that, no, I don't set a time for myself on this stuff. Unless, of course, there's a deadline, because, hey, and then what I end up doing is I work harder. So I don't say, okay, I want to settle for mediocrity here. What I instead try to do is just work harder, which may not be healthy, but that's when I start working late nights if I need to, or working more on the weekends. I'll plug in and I'll put 10 hours, 12 hours in a day on a Saturday or something like that. If I've got a deadline to meet, no, there's really, for some reason, I don't know, it's just something I can stick with. And when I get into the process, it's like that consumes my mind and I can just roll with it. I can block out whatever's going on. Yeah, I mean, I sit there and think, but lately I've not even been listening to much music while I've been working. I've just been, I can think about random and process, and it's bodily, it's kinesthetic enough. I don't know. I'm still trying to understand the way that I'm created, but I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I took that as a, you take the small victories too. Like you said, when you finish a lip or you finish a nose or an ear or something, that's maybe one way that helps to celebrate the little points along the way. Hey,
I want to go back and clarify and yes. And there was my mind like going back to something and starting to perseverate and hyper-focus on something. But I said I didn't want to settle for mediocrity. That sounds pretty pretentious and arrogant. And that's never the way I want to come across. There's an element of humility that I think is essential to success. And whenever I say something like that, I always want to keep myself in check. But what I meant by that, and that's why I want to clarify. I had somebody look at me one time and he said, there's a difference in good and great. And he pretty much by that meant you just need to settle for good. But I always thought, I don't want to settle for good. Like if I do my very best and it comes out mediocre and I've run out of wood because I can't take it down any farther, then great. I know that I've done my best. And what I've learned in that is something that has been part of why my work has grown so much in such a short time, because I don't want to be like, oh yeah, this looks good enough. Like, yeah. I'm looking at Fred Coggiolo as the model. I'm looking at Bruno Walpoth as the model. And whenever I get done with a piece, I'm looking at it and I'm comparing it side by side. And I'm like, well, he did better on this. He did better on this. And then I just want to do my best with it. I know that sounds
no, really weird, but that makes sense.
I don't want to settle. I'm not doing it for a living. I don't need to carve, you know, 5 pieces a week to make the rent and the light bill. You know, I can pour into it and turn it into something that. So I read on a Dove candy, you know, those little Dove chocolates. I read on a little Dove chocolate wrapper the other day, like it's done when you're proud of it. And it's like, yeah, that's it. But yeah, sorry if I sounded like for a second.
No.
Haughty.
No, no. Certainly not. I did have to write down perseverate though, because I didn't know what that meant. So there you go. I'm learning. Right. I'm learning new words.
Well,
I like the term. My takeaway from Brian is we are sub creators. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a cool term.
So there's a book called Spiritual World of Tolkien, and it's just like that is something that I did set down before it was done. Like, I'm an English teacher who really struggles with reading. I can't hardly make it through a book. Like, so, and that's so weird. Like, I can sit there and I can carve something for a month straight and I can work hours a day on it and it never get old to me. But every other thing that I've ever done, it's like, I felt like I got really good at pen and ink portraits. I got bored with it. And I set it aside. I felt like I, you know, this or that or the other. And I get to a point where, like, I pick up a book, I read a few chapters, and I'm like, I don't finish it. Like, I'm the only English teacher that you'll probably ever meet that's not a reader. I got into English because I liked creation. I liked writing. Writing was fun for me. So, kind of random. But it's a cool book.
Take a lesson from your students and audiobooks.
Yeah, audiobooks are great while you work. Whenever I did the one of Samwise Gamgee, I would listen to. I went and bought this The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit on CD, and I bought me a little old school CD player. I don't know if people even still use those, but I just listened to it on compact disc.
Yep. Yeah. I can't even my mind just drifts. I can focus. I can listen if I'm doing something. Then I start thinking about my own crazy thoughts and some silly idea. And I'm terrible all around with English literature.
So. I get it.
I keep hoping that I'll find another book that captures my attention the whole way through. And I've been buying book after book and nothing's worked yet. So. Not in the last. I do well with short books, but yeah, I've read a few books through in the last, I don't know, a few months, but not. I'm similar in that. Like, it has to be a good one, it has to be a really good one.
You know what book? Book I probably read the most was Into the Wild.
Mm-hmm. I didn't read that.
John.
Not the guy from Alaska.
Yeah.
Not read
it. For some reason, I think I've read it 8 or 9 times. It just kind of hits something in me that he was a foolish boy, but I related to a lot of why he did that and stuff. So it was cool.
Well, I can relate to some foolishness every now and again.
Yeah.
One of the best ones that I've read recently, until the last chapter, and it actually did capture my attention, was Gary Paulson's The Rifle.
Yeah, I loved Gary Paulson as a kid. I read most of his books.
Brilliant. If you read it, once you get to the last chapter, throw it in a fire. Like, I have never been so captivated by a book. If I do find one that I love, like, I love it. And that was one that I found that was just amazing to me. But then that last chapter, it was terrible. That's all I'll say.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't. He had, I think, two or three books that we got, but I inherited from my brother, and I really liked them. So, sorry if you can hear my cat in the background. Apologies.
Better than the fly buzzing around.
True. Yeah. Well, that's fantastic, Brian. Doug, do you have any other questions at all, or any other thoughts?
No. I tapped my questions out. I was waiting for you to pitch in and see what you had. But yeah. I know you guys have been going back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I guess we could talk a little bit about that, Brian, when we started chatting, what that was about. I think what I was calling you about, if I remember correctly, was I was working on this base for a carving and I was undecided. And, you know, it's funny, backing up a little bit to tell the story. I had a friend of mine come in. He's an art professor, advanced art painting professor at CCS, or one of our best schools in Detroit, fine art schools. And he was actually graphic design schools and art schools, but looking at the bases of all these carvings in my shop. And I was like, which one of these do you like best? You know, I'd spent all this time working on this complicated one, and I was hoping he'd say that one. And then there was this carving off to the corner that my friend carved in 20 minutes, right? He did the entire base. He did more than the base in 20 minutes. So the base itself, maybe 15, maybe 20 minutes at best. And he said, I like that one. He pointed to my friends. I think this one's the most naturalistic. It's just got a good spacing to it. And this is the work of Abby Peterson, right? This is all done with a chainsaw and a manpa. And he went on and on about it. And I looked at it and I just was like, I think he's right. I think this is a better base than all these bases I have in here. And it made me... It kind of annoyed me, but I called Abby right away and I said, dude, I had this artist guy over who I've looked up to for a long time. And he's like knowing a Renaissance painter in real life. And he came over and he just saw your chainsaw base and he thought it was better than all the other bases in the shop. He's like, man, I'm really glad to hear that. And so it started making me question things. So I was calling you to see where you were at because I knew you were making these larger scale pieces. And first of all, I wanted to congratulate you on your... this prolific time you've been producing just a lot of like 3/4 or life size busts. I'm not sure exactly the scale, but I've kind of been in the same mode and I've been noticing that you are. And so, yeah, we were just, you know, talking about that. And yeah, I don't know if you had anything to piggyback off of that with. There's really no question in it, but I guess really... Yeah, I just admire the output too, because these carvings, these larger scale carvings, I have a hard time not just playing with them forever, you know, and never letting them go. And it seems that you're good at finishing them, which I admire. I appreciate that.
Well, it's kind of like, I don't know, like I said, this is the first thing that I've ever really remembered that it's like, I couldn't even color as a kid. You know, like, I could not finish a coloring page. And this is the first time that I've ever found something that it's like, I want to see this done. And I want to get that satisfaction of seeing it actually come to life, you know? So, one thing that I've been doing, and part of the secret to the volume that you've been seeing lately, is that, like, right now I'm working on number 4 in this series. The one that I'm working on now has actually ended up quite a bit smaller than the other two because I've made more mistakes on it. I had an idea in my head and I roughed it out, and then I got another idea, but I'm letting it go. That's the whole point of this series. It's me kind of rebelling against this whole, like, conceptual idea that I'm just letting the concept come as it comes. I'm just getting in there, and I might have a very basic idea, but then it might change. Like, it might start as a straight-faced person and then turn into a smile. The one that I'm working on now started it with an idea in my head. Then I met an individual, and I'm like, dude, that's really cool. I want it to be him. And then I started working on it, and it's like, well, this looks terrible. And I thought about throwing it away, and I'm like, no, let's continue with it. Now it's completely gone from being a young man to an old man to being a young man again. And now I'm starting to get to the point where I really like it. But I've been working in white pine. So white pine is just – a lot of people are like, I don't like pine. It doesn't finish well. And if you're sanding it, it doesn't. It's terrible. But I'm blade finishing it. So I mentioned the CNC machines earlier, and I actually just researched this and found out that it was super cool. I love the impressionistic style with the heavy brush strokes, impressionism in painting. And something about that I've always really liked with carving. I like to see the heavy brush strokes. I think one person that's helped me to really appreciate those heavy brush strokes, talking about a caricature artist, is Alex Joyner. Like, I look at Alex Joyner's work and I see the heavy brush strokes. And I say brush strokes, you know what I mean. The gouge marks. I see those and I'm like, or Danielle Rose Bird, you all know her. Like, oh my gosh, like her bowls are like just unreal. And they've got the heavy gouge marks in them. There's something about that I've always liked. And I think it's kind of funny because where I don't have like a bunch of art school and there are a lot of knowledge gaps. I was researching impressionists the other day, and it turns out that the impressionists actually started doing what they were doing and fostered that movement because they looked around them and they had been working for all these years to develop this beautiful realism so that they could create portraits of people with a brush and paint. And then the photograph came out and they were like, well, now what are we going to do? Now anybody can go and get a lifelike depiction of themselves. You know, they can go up and this photograph can do a better job than I can do with my paintbrush and that fast. So where do we fit in the world now? Essentially is kind of like how that happened. And so then they started working, instead of trying to develop that hyper-realism, they still stuck with a realist style, but they let it just be the impression of it. And the heavy brush strokes then was something that the camera could not replicate. And so I kind of compare that now to the CNC machine. Like, the CNC machine can make perfect passes and turns, but that CNC machine cannot replicate the uneven brush strokes of the gouge. It's very.
I had a fella ask me to do a carving for him. He wanted a sign. And I said, for what that's going to cost you, you might as well get a CNC guy to do that for you, because he just wanted a sign with his name on it. And he said, I am a CNC guy, and I want the hand-carved look. That's what he wanted. Yeah. He wanted those brush strokes on the sign. He didn't like the perfect CNC cutout. So
that's funny. Well, what difference is a $200 quilt from a $2,000 quilt?
Yeah, hand stitching, right?
Exactly. The uneven, imperfect hand stitching. Like,
yeah.
And so then I got into, like, whenever I was doing this, like, compulsive improvisations thing, and I'm just like, I'm just going to embrace it. I'm just going to embrace, because I have tried and tried to figure out some to put myself into this box and try to, like, you know, you mentioned earlier that I've been kind of staying in the fine art lane, which kind of is something else that I kind of rebel against. Like, there's a little bit of me that kind of hates that element because, Anyway, that's a whole nother thesis.
I get it. Yeah.
But what people typically think of whenever they think of fine art, I've been kind of trying to stay in that lane, and I have tried like mad to like come up with like artist statements on all these applications and stuff that I've been doing, and it just, I can't get it figured out. And what it is I'm trying to come up with some concept or position or whatever, and it's just not working for me. It ends up being me faking it is what it always amounts to. Or it's an idea that I got in my head for like a month, 2 months, a year. And for that time period, like that was what I was truly passionate about. But how does that, that's more like a statement about the series itself and not a statement about me as an artist. So I just decided to embrace the fact that I almost feel like I have to create. Yep. That it is a compulsion for me. And so the improvisations and things like, I always love the heavy brush strokes with that, but it's like, see, I lost my train of thought. It's something about like, I don't know, as I started to embrace it and I started to get into these bigger pieces, it's something where I just want to make something beautiful still. I want to create and I want to do things. And I don't just want to sit there and talk about it. I want to do it. You know, I don't want to see Bruno Walpas' work and think, wow, that's beautiful. Like, I want to do it. I want to create something of that magnitude. I want Fred Kojo's work. I want to do it. Shape Grifter. I don't know if you all know who that person is, but I don't know what that his or her real name is, but like some beautiful bas relief. Like, I want to do it. I don't just want to talk about it. I don't want to be on the sideline. You know, the old song, put me in, coach. I don't know. It's an old baseball song. And the white pine has been something where I'm able to carve it quickly. The radial shrinkage is around 3% instead of around like 6% that you get with 5 to 6% that you get with a lot of hardwood. So it doesn't crack as bad. The gouge goes through it easy. Mm-hmm. I'm brush finished by brush finishing it. What I mean, I'm finishing it with a gouge. So I'm not going back through and doing a lot of sanding. I'm letting the brush strokes show in the work. And because of that, that is one reason why I'm able to complete things a little bit faster right now, going back to what you were saying about the volume. By letting those brush strokes show, it's separating it from the CNC machine. It's beautiful. It goes with that impressionist style that I admire so much. And then at the same time, it does allow one nice side effect of that is it allows me to finish it fairly quickly. I don't have to do a bunch of tedious sanding for the most part. And it's just fun. So
fantastic. Yeah, no, it is. It's a whole nother approach and I appreciate it. And I've dabbled in it a little bit, with, especially like doing both, you know, a little sanding and then some areas not. And, that's fantastic. Well, Brian, thanks so much for talking about your process and everything you've been doing and, some of the kind of behind the scenes parts of that too. And your work is, you know, as we said before, it's just, it's a really, really, amazing and fun to see, your growth. And, it's a great thing to witness, man. So thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
And how can people find your work? Where are you? I know you're on Instagram for sure. Is there any other place they can find you? You're under Rough Cut Woodcraft. Is that Instagram? No,
it's Rough Cut Craft. So, and you have to be careful of that because there's somebody that's like making an account that's exactly like mine and it's Rough Period Cut Craft. Like, so there's no period in the name there. It's just Rough Cut Craft. I need a website, like, especially somebody that's doing, like, submitting for galleries and exhibitions. And, you know, people always want a card. I don't have cards yet. people always want a website. I don't have that yet either. But right now it's only on Instagram. in its rough cut craft.
Rough cut craft. Well, thank you very much, Brian. That's I encourage everyone to go and check him out on Instagram and follow him along on his journey. And yeah, you're in for a treat. Well, there you have it, folks. Our Brian Melton, Rough Cut Craft. Now, listen, what was your takeaway? But I'll tell you mine right off the bat.
Yeah.
When people tell me they don't have time to practice, you make time. You have time for what you want to do. Brian gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So he can carve for 3 hours before work. Good gravy. That's commitment. Hey?
Yeah, it is. It's inspiring, man. It's like, it's again, that's kind of why I've been, you know, I've conversed with him probably two or three times over the last couple of months, is just seeing what he's produced. And I mean, really, it's nice to have people rub off on you who are making a lot of art, and he's doing that. So he's doing great work too. It's just really great to see how far he's come too. I mean, we've known about Brian for what, the last at least 2 years now, or a year and a half. And
first time I talked to Brian over Zoom, I had extreme beard envy. He had the longest beard ever. And but since then I grew a 1 year beard, and it's funny that we're both he's got still has more beard than I do right now. Yeah, but we're back to little beards. But but there you go. Even if you practice for 1 hour, if you carve for 3 hours, you're three times ahead.
Yeah.
Right. So if he says he's only been carving for 3 years, so really, he's probably 10 years for your average person.
Right.
And that's how you get better. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
There is no, there's no magic pill to eat. It's called practice.
It's true. It's good, man. All right. Mailbag.
Mailbag. It's mailbag time, folks.
It's the time of the week that we...
Boy, I hate that you put me on the spot that I have to sing. I always go high. My wife always says, why do you always sing jokingly? I say, because I can't sing normally. So I always make up a high pitch or something.
This is a question from Lee. I'm going to say it's Godin. It could be Godin, but I'm guessing it's Godin. Hey, Lee, Doge and Alec, I always sharpen my knives with a strop, never using a stone. I see mixed methods. Some folks say you eventually have to use a stone to truly bring back an edge. Do either of you use a stone? Can you always strop with leather? Thanks, as always. Love the shows. Lee Godin.
Well, Lee, I'm not sure what Alex is going to say on this subject, but I believe if you have proper stropping technique, you will, you can get by. I mean, I say that, and I always maintain that I've never had a stone on any of my tools, but I also have a power strop that has a back on it, so I can actually hold the tool in the perfect position every time. So I say that with a little bit of caveat that,
right?
Because if you get sloppy with stropping, you're definitely going to roll your edges over and really convex them more, but makes for a stronger blade too, but you don't get that same cutting.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. No, I mean, I don't know how anyone could avoid, you doing some shaping. I don't use a stone. I have a Worksharp 3000, which has like a glass disc that you mount sandpaper to, and that's has, you know, different types of stickers on it. There's like an 80 grit, 200, 400, so on and so forth. And so I don't know how you could do without that, because maybe it's because I mess my tools up more than most, but. Yeah, I've fractured the edge. I'll break stuff. Not fracture. I'll just bust it right off. I'm rough on my tools, and so I like to have that. And I'm not doing it all that often. To your point, to Lee's point. At least every month or two, I've got a big pile of. I actually keep a pile of tools that have been damaged beyond honing, and I leave them over by the sander, the Worksharp, and And when that time comes, I always dread it, but I always rework the edge and I have to grind it flat again. And so,
yeah. Well, I will say this too, on another, like, maybe I'm a little bit, maybe I enjoy the power stropping method, but probably I caution to say my most used tools I do more often, but probably once every 2 weeks, I will do my whole set all at once. Mm-hmm. Just strop everything and have everything like a complete set ready, all on the same level. And then in 2 weeks, if I use one constantly, I'll run back and forth if needed. But otherwise, I just keep them all like letting them get dull is your enemy.
Right.
Don't let them get dull.
Yep.
So
no, I can strap. See. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I'm probably bad at that too, and that's probably why I'm sanding more. But yeah, or I just hit something that I don't want to hit, or you know. Yeah, I'm hard on my tools. So
well, there you go. Good point though, because I'm not very often carving into hard woods and whatnot. It's either bark or basswood, really, on my end. So I'm not really worried about hitting a knot or damaging a tool. So.
Yeah, that's right. Knots do it.
Knots are
the worst.
Knots are terrible.
Knots are nuts.
I've seen axes chip on knots, but.
All right, so here's another question. Hopefully that suffices for you there, Lee. This is Nadia. She says, "Hey, Doug and Alec, thank you for the show. Alec, can you read my email in a Russian accent, please? I am Russian, and I think it's going to be delightful." That's great. My question is, you know how they say... in Mother Russia, no, I don't know how to do the Russian accent. They say never compare yourself to crafter or artist, and that instead you should compare yourself to who you were yesterday. I don't know how to do a Russian accent.
Yeah. It's a fair try.
Do you agree with that? Does comparing yourself to others feel daunting and discouraging to you, or does it help on the contrary? Have you felt about stopping doing what you do because you think someone is better at it? Thank you.
Well, we just had the greatest example of that with Brian talking, and he only looks up to people better than him, and because he finds it such a challenge that he craves to be at that level. And if you want to get better, you should challenge yourself.
Yep.
Now, maybe start lower.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I said, just have fun. That's my thing. Just have fun. You don't have to be. After Brian, it's everything is always striving for excellence. But I always said for myself, if I carve silly little guys and silly faces and stuff forever, I'm good with that.
Yep.
I don't am I still gonna die? Yep.
Yep. So yeah, it's true.
Have fun. But yeah, definitely it's if you don't challenge yourself, you won't grow. So if you really want to get better, you should challenge yourself and strive. It doesn't have to be all at once. And like the little wins. You know, work on an eye, or work on your noses, work on little bites, and eventually it's all going to come together. So
it's good. Yeah, no, I agree. I do that. I compare myself to how I was, and sometimes I look at my old stuff and I think I was, you know, I like the stuff that I did better then in some ways because maybe I was trying to prove myself a little bit more then, and then now I'm less like that, or I don't know. I don't know what it is, but. No, I mean, I kind of like all the work, you know, I never really have loved anything that I do, so I don't really feel like that competitive with myself, but, I do get competitive with other people for sure. And it's less competitive and more just like, it's good to have people to aspire to. So, maybe it's just having people that I admire. I think maybe competition or like, envy are some of the more negative associations with, you know, like trying to be like somebody are like I've heard it said they're like inverted admiration, you know, like envy or jealousy is like inverted admiration for someone, except for you say that you can't have it, whatever it is that the person has. And so I think maybe having an attitude of, I could probably do that if I put my mind to it, helps you from having this feeling of jealousy. So yeah. So working hard and practicing is, that's definitely key, and it helps you to keep aspiring to more and doing other things that you like and have fun with it. So, have I ever felt stopping doing what you do because you think someone is better at it? Yeah, for sure. I think I've been, discouraged in some regards by people who are really good at stuff. But usually I think it, I've been able to turn it around, I think, for the most part, but I don't really know. I guess I'm a mystery unto myself sometimes. I don't really know. Michael Ferralesco. This guy's Italian for sure. I got this wood speed. No, I don't know how to do Italian. You did the Italian accent pretty well earlier.
That's all I have is the vision.
The vision. I carved this wood spirit from some junk wood and left it out for a few months. Today, I tried to fix things I didn't like, and accidentally, I was happy with the way the fresh cuts looked against the weathered wood. Being new to the carving, is it a common finishing technique? Oh. Yeah, okay, the fresh cuts looked against the weathered wood. Oh, I see what she, I see. So he put it aside, and then he picked it back up, and he liked the contrasting cuts to the weathered ones. Yeah. That's kind of neat.
Now, it just depends. You have to stop now. If it puts it back outside of weather again. Right. Yeah. Well, catch up with itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I have done that, but I don't know if I've left it that way. Like, I did a thing where I would leave a carving outside after I finished it, and then I'd bring it in, and then I'd clear coat it. Maybe I'd sand it lightly, but no, I don't know if I've contrasted the weathered to the new freshly carved stuff. That's a cool idea. I like that.
I think it's just a form of staining parts of the carving.
Right. Yeah, but it's definitely cool. All right, so let's see, moving on to the, thank you, Michael, appreciate that. Ingve, is that how you say his name? Ingve. Hey guys, enjoying the podcast. I noticed my knives, wooden handles are getting darker, dirtier. I oil them regularly, but was curious for any tips on how to clean them.
Don't clean them. Don't ever clean them. I would love to have all my tools just worn and oily, dirty, and
yeah.
Oil changes the color too, by the way. It will keep darkening and darkening with, as you oil, and that oil ages in the wood. But yeah, no, I would never want to clean them up. I like a nice weathered, worn tool. Says you use your tools.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't mind. Sometimes they get a patina. Some of the painted ones get a patina on them. I think it's cool. I don't know. I never really liked when my tools looked all clean and fresh.
No, worry about the edge and keep the handles dirty.
keep your edge clean and your handle dirty.
There you go.
There you go, folks.
That's wisdom.
Do you have any media that you want to sneak in there before we get off?
Got a cough. I can. Yeah, I do actually. No art. Well, I shouldn't say that. He is an artist in his own right, but not in this sense. But I've been following this guy for probably more than a decade, and his name is Deke Diedrichsen. Now, he is relaxshacks.com, and basically he's a professional fort builder. He just builds playhouses and forts. And I got back on a tangent this weekend. I probably watched 10 or 12 of his videos in a row, and it's fun. So I have a couple of his books.
Oh, cool.
Humble homes, simple shacks, cozy cottages, ramshackle retreats, and funky forts. But I say he's an artist because he made all of his cartoon. Wow. His whole book is his own drawing, and it's fantastic.
That's incredible.
It is. It's great. And he's a real good artist. I've watched him take like thrift store paintings and add stuff to it. It's really fun. Really fun stuff. But he builds all these little crazy little forts. Some are just plain silly, but that's the fun of it, right? But he's a grown man making forts, and I like it. And he's big on recycled materials.
Oh, yeah. I wondered about that. I immediately thought of our old buddy.
Yeah, no, he's huge on the recycled materials. So
that's awesome.
I don't think I've ever seen a new window in any project he's ever done. Or
wow.
So that's he's big on that. And Tough Tex roofing. That that poly, some clear roofing.
Huh, like, that's cool. Oh, yeah. I have some of that in my backyard. Yeah, yeah.
It's the
really
clear poly, like greenhouse material. Yeah. I've always wanted to make one. I don't know why I get so excited by these things. I'm 50 years old, and I want to go make a fort.
100%.
I do.
No, I get it. So you're starting to understand, or maybe you've always understood the joy of making tiny outbuildings, because it's like smaller goals, easier to accomplish. It's like a short book.
I don't understand myself sometimes, because the house that I'm in, I built myself.
Yeah.
Gave me zero satisfaction. Honestly, it's given me zero satisfaction.
Wow.
Because that's all I've ever done is build houses.
Right.
Like I always say, I could to carve a little Florence man gets me so jazzed up and excited. Or like I said, I remember making little boats, little stupid little plywood boats that made me more excited than building a whole dumb house.
Isn't that funny?
Multiple times over, but it's just, I don't know what it is.
You
like what's different, I guess.
Exactly, and that's why I think it's so fun to talk to Brian, is because he's kind of a baby, right? He's 3 years into this,
and
you could see it in his eyes. He's just all excited. He's full of juice and energy and vibes and he's ready to get down and dirty and make stuff, and it's fun. And you know, I think I'm the old weathered builder. You know, I've been doing it for 15 years. I'm the old hag builder, you know, the old, know, cut wet, soggy, dug, kind of dripping with
crusty
old. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I just wanted to see how far I could play that out. But no, I relate to that. You know, I've been doing the carving for so long. And so, yeah, I think the point was made, but yeah.
I'm glad I asked him. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you.
That's it. That's all.
I'm glad I asked him about the that art focus.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met someone who was like in the wood carving, because I came into wood carving from bushcraft, which was like the green wood carving, which turned to caricature. But I never, and in fact, even when I started talking with you, you were doing a lot more. Wood spirits, is that fair?
Yeah, maybe so.
I don't remember you doing like big busts
at the time. Anyway, I was teaching a lot more.
You had done it, but I mean, mm-hmm. you weren't doing it at the time.
Yeah.
And then to see someone come into carving strictly focused on like art shows, museums, everything like that's what he wants. That's his goal. It's not to sell things. It's not to punch him, get him out, and move on. He like it's interesting.
It is, and it's good because, you know, I'm not, I guess I don't really think of myself as a real, you know, I always say that I teach carving, but I feel more like a wood carving advisor or something, or like a consultant of wood carving, because I'm just giving suggestions. I'm not one of these, like, you know, researched intellectual art guys where I could tell you the history of all these cultures and all these types of wood carving. You know what I mean? I'm not like a true teacher in that regard. I'm just like a wood carver. I like the art of wood carving. I consider myself a carver and so a crafter, you can call it, or a wood carver or an artist or whatever you want to call it. But it's definitely the fun part of it is just, you know, helping people out and then making the stuff in the community. So Brian did a good job of, hopefully he inspiring people to try new things and to, get inspired and wake up early and just do unusual things.
Yep.
So
did you have any media this week?
Yeah. Mine was this girl named Bella White. She's a young, I think she's in her 20s. She is a just beautiful singer. I mean, just beautiful voice. She Bella White on Spotify. She wrote this song called "Just Like Leaving" that I think is a beautiful song, and the mandolin on it reminds me a lot of Andrew Marlin, I believe his name is. He's a mandolin player in this band called Watch House. Anyway, it's definitely the genre, my genre, my favorite genre of music right now. And it's kind of like a bluegrass kind of feel to it or vibe, and so I rediscovered her music on a sunny Sunday last week, I was just blissing out, driving and listening and enjoying what she wrote. So that's mine.
You know what my musical highlight of the week is?
What's that?
Sitting downstairs last week and hearing Mumford and Sons coming from my young daughter's bedroom.
Oh, really?
The whole album. I thought, that's fantastic.
The early stuff, you mean? Or yes. The new one?
The first album. I made me so happy.
Yeah, that's cool.
But on the way out the door of episode number 37, I want to give you the jack of all trades full saying.
Yeah.
A jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one.
So good.
We always think of that master of none, but as a derogatory statement, but better to be a little good at everything than to be excellent and good for nothing else at one thing.
And with that, folks, take your vitamins.
See you next week, folks.